Mainstream Mental Health Radio
with Dr. John Huber.
What do you think you are, crazy or something? Well, you're not.
We're on a mission from God.
News, issues revolving around mental health.
Dr. John Huber, a mental health professional for over 20 years, the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, a clinical forensic psychologist, and a psychology professor at Texas State University. Breaking the silence of mental health, one day at a time, discussing the human condition, providing a sounding board for mental health issues, and making mental health mainstream.
You got a gift, my friend.
Now it's time for Mainstream Mental Health Radio.
Let the healing begin.
With Dr. John Huber.
I'm your host, Dr. John Huber. Thanks very much for listening, as we really do appreciate it. I think we have a wonderful show today, another fantastic one. And remember to check us out at our website at mainstreammentalhealth.org. Let your friends know about the show, and please listen to our podcast on blogtalkradio.com, Mainstream Mental Health. All right, today we're looking at some interesting events that happened this past week, and unfortunately not all of them were positive. We had an attack this week at the University of Texas, and it was pretty traumatizing. I know that being in Central Texas here, and at another university just south of UT, when I was heading north, man, the highway patrol, everybody, Texas State Police, they were all flying up to University of Texas. And, you know, the only time I'd seen that before was when we had the shooter who had an AR-type weapon on campus. And apparently, you know, he didn't even shoot at students directly. He was just shooting, and he was quickly taken care of and dispatched at that point. But this time we had a student who we found out even this morning that has serious mental health issues and was recently actually involuntarily committed to a mental health facility. And when you think about involuntary commitment, it's against his own will. And it typically means that he was a threat to himself or others. So he went through, he did his stay there, and it was in another county. It was not here in Austin, Travis County. But they stabilized him and deemed him no longer a threat to himself or others, and they let him go. And he came back to class, and obviously he became a threat to himself or others again. Usually what we do in those situations and in those hospitals is we do medicate the patient and get them on psychotropics, usually very heavy psychotropics at that point. And that usually calms down and stops if they're hearing voices. It stops all the voices, tends to get rid of any kind of delusions that they may have. And as we, you know, look at the police report, they talked about how he stabbed the first person in the back and left that one student dead, and then walked calmly and stabbed three others. The other three are hurt. I believe one is still hospitalized but going to survive. And the witnesses and the police say that he was just walking around calmly, and when the police showed up, he essentially just put his weapon down and was easily apprehended within 2 minutes. The student hasn't been charged yet at this point with the mental health issues. I think there's some issues going on with his competency, his ability to stand trial. And also, I think there may be some issues with the legal term insanity, which is pretty interesting. It doesn't mean that you're actually mentally ill, but it is definitely something to worry about if we're wanting to go after this. Now, nobody may ask for that. He may be able to be a participant in his own defense, and it surely is going to affect culpability at some point. All right, with that, we've also seen, and many of you probably heard through social media and stuff, that Brad and Angelina have broken up. And since splitting from Angelina, Brad Pitt's friends, the media, and the like have been talking about how he's drinking too much. He's running up basically a self-inflicted end to his marriage. And he even has been calling himself an emotional retard who hit the lottery but threw it all away. So obviously, you know, Brad Pitt at 53 is quite upset about what's going on. He admits that what he calls his professional drinking helped ruin his marriage. Pitt's now a teetotaler and in therapy, and confesses that again, he won the lottery, but would still waste my time in hollow pursuits. He branded himself emotionally retarded, and when it comes to showing love, he reveals that he slept on a friend's floor for 6 weeks as he recovered from the split with Angelina. He also admits that, you know, his work, his film career has taken him away from the six children too much, and that definitely impacts relationships and marriages. So it's probably more problematic in his profession than most of ours. You know, we're gone a lot of times just during the week, during the 8 to 5 hours, and we get to go home and spend evenings and weekends with our children. But if he's gone and doing movies for months at a time in another country, it's not easy to do that. All right, you're listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio. My name is Dr. John Huber. We have some interesting and exciting news. Mainstream Mental Health, along with Judge David Glickler and the Hays County Courts, have been working with the Hays County Veterans Court. And what we found is that 93% of the veterans charged with crimes who go through the Veterans Court and their training, their therapy, do not reoffend if given adequate treatments. And if we look at the national population of individuals over a 3-year period of time, the recidivism rate, or the rate of committing crimes again and being involved with the courts, is around 68%. So 68 versus 10%, I think that shows a significant, or actually, you know, 7%, but I think that shows a significant advance for our veterans. It shows that a lot of what's going on with them has to do with their emotional status, their mental health. And if you look at the 1.7 million veterans who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, it's estimated 20%, or roughly 300,000, suffer from PTSD disorder, post-traumatic stress, and or major depression. And this comes out of the RAND Center for Military Health Policy and Research in 2008 under their Invisible Wounds of War. Now, we've been working with Hays County Veterans Treatment Court and with my students and interns from Texas State University. They completed their follow-up, and what we found again is that roughly 7% of our veterans are all that have been re-involved in the court system. Now, we're still here saying that, hey, we have an in with the therapy at the Veterans Association. Well, we do. We get a court order from our judge, but it's still a 90-day wait court order compared to someone without the court order going to the Veterans Administration. And you end up with a lot fewer days, the 132 days if you're not court ordered, the 90 days with court order. And again, that's one of the things Mainstream wants to do. We want to try and fill that 90-day gap, or the 132-day gap if you're a veteran. 6 out of the 31 veterans that we worked at are actually on medication respective to their diagnosis. And most of these individuals, roughly 47% of them, actually participated in therapy, and that's more than just social skills, but actual individual therapy. And then another of them, 45% of all of them, actually provided or participated in group therapy. And these programs actually help both men and women They included, we actually had a woman's group therapy just for women, and then we had alcohol awareness and group therapy. So these are things that are really important with all of this. Then we followed up with them after they had come through the program, and in a double-blind setting, the interns who were doing the study did not actually know these individuals, and the courts didn't know which individuals answered in each way. So that increased the likelihood that they actually were responding honestly. And then we were able to actually go through court records to see how many had been involved with the courts. And what we did found out is that less than 10% were rearrested and brought before the courts after participating in this. And I think that's significant. I think it's definitely news. I know that since this has come about, we've been approached by Comal County, which is just south of Hays County, and they're duplicating the efforts there. And I'd like to see them further move on to a mental health court at this point. Lastly, we had a little story about a cruel YouTube father and stepmother who filmed themselves telling their 9-year-old son he was going to be adopted, and then they proceeded to smash his Xbox. They lost custody of the two children, the 9 and the 12-year-old, and I think rightfully so. They had been doing pranks, what they called pranks, on these kids, including the youngest one, who's currently 9, for the last several years, 2-3 years, and they've capitalized on it monetarily. Mom and dad, or stepmom and dad, have over the years averaged between $200,000 to $350,000 a year with the number of viewers watching. And I think the right thing happened. Biological mom now has custody, and what Child Protective Services do about this. And we definitely need to watch and see how these kids react. Are they going to end up with PTSD in the future? You're listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio Show. My name is Dr. John Huber. We have a guest today, Dr. Scott Shamarin. And he's a neuroperformanceologist. He is a nationally known speaker, coach, and author. He spent over 20 years learning powerful success techniques. He has used what he has learned and created to transform his life, himself, losing 180-plus pounds and maintain it while rediscovering his vitality. His coaching program has literally transformed people's lives, helping them discover how amazing they are and live the life of their dreams. Scott has developed his own technique called Mind Performance Training, and allows people to make rapid and permanent changes to their lives so that they can overcome obstacles, challenges, and accomplish all of their goals, dreams, and visions they have. Scott, welcome to the program.
Thanks. I am not a doctor, though. I have to tell everybody I'm not a doctor.
All right. So how did you get started in all this? So you lost 180 pounds. What was going on? What was happening?
Well, I'm a giant. I'm 5'6". And I spent my life as an obese child and as an obese adult. And I hid from the world. I was teased and I was bullied. And I had huge periods of time in my life where I would either be gaining huge amounts of weight, losing huge amounts of weight. And I couldn't figure out why I was having this like almost like a second person inside of me, that every time I would make progress and moving towards losing weight and finding some happiness and joy, where I'd pull myself right back. And so I started studying how my mind worked, and on different modalities, from hypnosis to all different types of meditation and different things to access the subconscious mind. And I started creating things for myself. And fast forward, I've kept off for a very long time now, more than 180 pounds. I've recaptured my youth and vitality. I'm going to be 55 years old in about a week. And I am in loving and enjoying my life, and through that journey, I've committed myself to helping other people do the same thing, and not just to lose weight, in any area of their life.
So are you using hypnosis, or what are you doing there?
Well, it seems that all permanent and lasting change takes place in the subconscious mind. And the state of hypnosis is the perfect gateway or doorway to access the subconscious mind to make those changes. And it seems to be very effective, and it also seems to work relatively quickly.
That's been my experience. And, you know, I haven't used it for all the stuff you have. I've worked with clients with, you know, stop smoking, pregnancy, delivery pain, a few phobias, and a couple groups with weight loss. And mm-hmm. it does tend to be. Now, there are some caveats to that. I've had clients who intentionally tried to stop the hypnosis from working, and, you know, they wasted their money, but that's, you know, they have that choice.
Mm-hmm. I deal a lot with that. I shouldn't say a deal. Sometimes I deal with clients that are resistant, or sometimes they're not even aware that they're resistant, but then there's ways for us to deal with that where we can get past that point of resistance. And once they can get past that point of resistance, then it's like a floodgate and all these wonderful and amazing things start happening for them.
I think that's accurate. So, you know, a lot of our listeners, they don't have experience with this type of stuff. So help us understand what is the subconscious, and how are you seeing that subconscious mind and affecting somebody in their daily life?
Okay. Well, I mean, there's really only two parts to our mind. You have our conscious and our subconscious mind. And most of us think that our conscious mind controls everything. But the reality is, neuroscientists have taught us that only about 10 or 15% of what we do at a conscious level. Almost everything we do is subconscious. I mean, even from how your heart's beating in your chest to your values, your beliefs, and your habits. And like the example I always use is, you know, when you learn how to drive a car, you're 16 years old, you get behind the wheel of a car, and you have to consciously think about looking in your left mirror, your right mirror, your rearview mirror. Are your hands at 10 and 2? Where is the brake? Where's the gas? Fast forward, after you've done it for a number of years, you get in the car and drive. There's no thought process whatsoever. You're on autopilot. That's your subconscious mind controlling those things. And the state of hypnosis, you know, for some people, that's got a very, I won't say a negative, but it's got a mysterious connotation. They think of a stage show and a man with a beard waving a, you know, a watch in front of their face, and it'll make them do bizarre, strange things. And the reality is,
it does scare a lot of people.
Sure. But the reality is, it's a natural state of mind that you experience all day long. Like, for example, when you drive your car and you go to work the same way every day and you go home the same way, how many times do you drive either direction or both directions where you have no recollection of ever getting to your destination, yet you got there without killing anybody, killing yourself, or having a car accident? It's a state of hypnosis. You watch a great movie.
Well, and some people also call it a state of flow.
Right.
When they do
well,
that.
And again, it's your terminology. I mean, you know, I always tell people, when you go to a movie theater and you watch an amazing movie for 3 hours, the movie ends, the rest of the world didn't exist, and it seems like only 10 minutes went by. That's a hypnotic state. You're in a trance state. You're fixated on one thing, and the rest of the world has gone away. I think a better definition for hypnosis is a monofocused state of mind, where you're focused only on one thing, and then the rest of the world just kind of fades away into the background for at least that period of time. It's pretty simple.
I think that's a good accurate description. That, I mean, I tend to, when I'm teaching my students, I talk to them about that it's an intense focus, concentration, and suggestibility on the side. So
mm-hmm.
that suggestibility, I think, is what gives us the ability to help people change. So I like that.
I agree. Uh-huh. Absolutely.
So then what you're saying is basically our subconscious tends to retain information from our previous life experiences, and some that we may not even realize that we've remembered or that we've even been exposed to. And then we're able to access that, either the individual doing some self-hypnosis meditation like we talked about, or a hypnotherapist or a coach of some sort can help them get to that. So mm-hmm. What happens, you know, when we get that guarded patient or that guarded person who doesn't want to allow us that? What do you do as a practitioner when you work with these individuals?
Well, I mean, first you've got to have a conversation. If they don't want to do it, why are they there? So, you know, I was always taught, I've studied a lot of the works of Milton Erickson, and Milton Erickson always said, take what they give you and move with them, not against them. So engage them in their ability of saying, hey, you're resistant to this, and move with them and use that resistance as a tool to move towards the direction you want to move it in. You know, a lot of it's, that's much more individualized too. I mean, everybody's a little bit different, but using right. the things they say and the words they say and using them as your ally, because the moment you try to push against their belief system, they're going to push back, even if they're not.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
And so move with them. There's a very famous story about Milton Erickson and his ability to use hypnosis. And this other famous psychiatrist didn't believe in hypnosis, and he came to see Milton Erickson. He wrote him a check for his time. He goes, I want you to hypnotize me, and you're not going to be able to. So Milton Erickson sat down with the man and spent an hour pretending not to hypnotize him. And at the end of the session, he said, you know what, you're right, I can't hypnotize you, and I was totally wrong. And the guy had a big smile on his face. He walked towards the door of Milton Erickson's office. He shook his hand, and Milton Erickson shook his hand and put him into a deep hypnotic state, and then he put him back to his chair and did another hour with him. And what happened was the moment mm-hmm. the guy felt comfortable that he had won, there was no resistance anymore. And he wasn't prepared for what was going to happen next. And in that moment of mental confusion, when he went to shake Milton Erickson's hand, and he gave that, he moved his hand in a different direction rather than an automatic response of a handshake and told him to sleep, he went to sleep. Mm-hmm. And so it's using what your clients present to you to their advantage to help them. So, because many times what they're trying to work on, they think that they can't overcome. They already have that skill and that ability in another area of their life. And it's just taking that and moving it from one place to another and making that connection in their mind that this is just like that. And then once that connection's made, then great things start to happen.
That's awesome. And I think you're right. I mean, most of my patients walk into the door, they already know what they need to do and what changes they need to make in their mind. Mm-hmm. So knowing that, you know, are there some parts of a person's brain or powers, for lack of a better term, that under hypnosis we can help our clients access to gain some kind of, for example, increased memory, that kind of stuff?
I think it's really limitless on what you can do in the hypnotic state. I mean, you know, I work with some cancer patients to help them create the expectation of getting well and the expectation of living a long life. Does it physically cure them from cancer? I don't know. And I wouldn't make that claim, but the moment their perspective changes mentally, a lot of very positive things happen in their life. So, I'm a believer that hypnosis can be used in almost any situation, if not to cure it, but certainly to help it and improve it and make it better.
Well, and we know, through, the work that I do in my hospitals, when I get patients who are depressed and I'm able to pull them out of that depression, how their body starts healing itself faster. And we've done studies and we know T cells start growing in huge increases of numbers, and their stress hormones, the cortical steroids start decreasing and their body starts responding really well. So I think that mm-hmm. There's actually, medicinal and biological research to support all this. So thinking, I work with a lot of veterans, and it's one of our goals here at Mainstream Mental Health is try to help our veterans. One of the things I get a lot of is post-traumatic stress disorder. How do you think hypnosis should be used to treat post-traumatic stress disorder in general?
I've used it with some veterans, and they've had great success with it. And I can't speak how everybody else would work with them, but for a lot of them, it's just releasing that the negative associations, the negative energy associated with the situation that's causing it, and also realizing that they need to leave it in the past. And so many people, one of their biggest struggles they have is they move the things from the past forward into their present moment. And the past needs to be where it is, in the past, and not in the present and not in the future. So for a lot of the people, especially with PTSD, is helping them take the energy out of those situations, realizing that they are in the past, is very helpful to them. can be very, very helpful.
Well, I see that with a lot of other things, not just PTSD, that people, you know, and you said it, they bring their problems from the past. They just can't let go of them and let them stay there. They have to bring them into the present, and it destroys a lot of people's lives, period.
Sure it does.
So that's an amazing thing if you can do that.
And a lot of times they don't want to let go of those things. They're actually getting some, even though it's very, very negative, they're getting some positive benefit out of it that they don't want to let go of. Like for a lot of people with weight, even though it's negative attention, they are getting attention and people are focusing on them because of their size. And or there's some other need in some convoluted way that they're getting fulfilled by having this negative habit, whatever it is they're trying to hold on to.
Right. Well, food's a tricky thing. I mean, because I work with a lot of people who are stuck in hospitals. In fact, I had a gentleman today was his first day eating solid foods. He's been on what we call TPN. Basically, he's been getting all his nutrition through an IV for the last 3 months. And they gave him very bland, you know, no spices, nothing. And it was like there was a party going on in his mouth. He was just so happy because, you know, there's so much gratification we get. And especially with somebody who's stuck in a hospital, those four walls start to feel like a prison. And then you get them that food, and it's just amazing how they turn around. And, you know, I think, you know, it's like, wait, we're getting off track here, but we could do just, you know, an hour just on that alone and how that affects people's diet and body image and consumption. And that's a major thing right there in and of itself. And, you know, I wanted to focus a lot today in the consciousness aspect of this. And so if I get back here on track, are there other things that generally you do? I know when I've done, you know, hypnosis with my patients, that, you know, as I wrap up the session, I always put in some things about them, you know, being able to remain calm and centered and at peace and things, you know, just general well-being statements to try and help them just, you know, continue moving forward without as much stress in their life. Are there things that you do like that or you recommend like that to help someone improve their life?
One of the things I do when I take somebody out of the hypnotic state, as I'm counting them back up into consciousness, I have them anchor in all the things we did in our session, that all of them are a part of their lives now and they will use them every day. And once they realize that, then and only then will they open their eyes. So I have them tie in their success with the session we had with them becoming conscious again and make that a condition for them to become conscious again. And I find it works really well. And it locks into things, and it sometimes even multiplies and amplifies those things and just makes them a little bit stronger.
Well, I think that's a good thing to do in that in general. Now, Scott, what if one of my listeners wanted to get a hold of you and find out more about you and or possibly even maybe hire you and get your services? How can they get a hold of you, and what services do you provide?
I work with people from a range of things. I've worked with little kids to I've worked with Olympic and professional athletes, people struggling with obstacles and challenges in their lives, or perhaps they want to accomplish something really big and they're not sure how to do that, or at least have the mindset of the vision on how to do that. I can help them with that. My website is easy. It's www.ultimatevisionarymind.com.
UltimateVisionaryMind.com.
Uh-huh.
And do you have any books out?
I have one book out. It's just I co-wrote a chapter in a book called Stepping Stones to Success with Dr. Dennis Waitley, Deepak Chopra, and Jack Canfield. It's a chapter on just really the chronology of my life. And then I'm working on a book right now and actually an audio program called The Quattric Formula for Success, which is helping people overcome the obstacles and challenges in their life and creating and living the life of their dreams.
Well, you'll have to let me know when you get that done. You can come back on and tell us all about that. And,
Absolutely. And
that would be great. And, you know, you can get a hold of my people and we can make that happen. I'd love to share that with my audience. And I really appreciate
awesome.
You coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Scott. And everybody, that's ultimatevisionarymind.com. If you want to get a hold of Scott and find out what he might be able to do for you, and I appreciate him coming on today. So that concludes our show and today's edition of Mainstream Mental Health Radio. Again, special thanks to our great guests. And to learn more about our shows, visit us on mainstreammentalhealth.org. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you here again next week.
Thanks for listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Check us out on social media, Google+, Mainstream Mental Health, Instagram at Mainstream Mental Health, Twitter at Mainstream MENTL, and search for Mainstream Mental Health on Facebook. Please tune in every week to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. The cost of personality.